Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is throwing yourself in. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I will begin the show by kind of setting the table and talking a little bit about this idea of throwing yourself in. Now, I didn't necessarily think of it like this, but imagine that somebody comes to you, a younger person who looks up to you as a sort of a role model. And the question that they had for you was, hey, cool older person, for lack of knowing your name, what's your best advice? If there was only one thing that you could tell me that was going to lead to me being more successful in anything that I do, what would it be? So think about it for a minute. Think about how you would answer that question. So somebody who looks up to you, somebody who sees you as a kind of a mentor, asks you, hey, what's the one thing that you could tell me that if I took it to heart would just make the biggest difference across the board? Well, I get asked that question a lot. I mean, I'm in that position, right? I'm set up for that question. And the interesting thing for me is the answer would be throw yourself in. And if somebody said, well, into what? I'd say, it doesn't matter. Because there's a magic that happens simply from being in the game that you can't imagine from the sidelines. So the other day, I very, very generous friend of a client gave me 50-yard front row, 50-yard line tickets to see the Rams game at the Coliseum. And so we went. And we're sitting there, and I mean, we were so close, we could, we could smell them, which isn't necessarily a great thing. But the problem was, like, even being that close to the game, I knew I had no idea what it's like to be in a football game, a professional football game. In fact, I wouldn't have any idea what it's like to be in a professional football game until the first time I got decked by a 300-pound lineman. Right? That's even, within the sport, the players, the pros, say, yeah, you're not really back until the first time you've been hit. Like even the quarterbacks whose job is about trying not to get hit, they want to get hit that first time. Because then you just, okay, I remember what this is like. Well, that's true in anything. No matter how much we watch it from the outside, no matter how much we think about what it would be like if, no matter how many neat ideas we come up with for, how we would respond if this happens and how would we respond if that happens, we have no idea what's actually possible for us until we're actually in the game. And the idea, so funnily enough, I was talking with somebody this morning and we were talking about fulfillment and they talked about how they didn't find their work fulfilling. And I made the observation that work is not inherently fulfilling, right? It's not like there's a magic, there are two lists, like, Santa's got his naughty and nice list that the divine order has a fulfilling job, unfulfilling job list. Our level of fulfillment in our job is directly proportional to the extent to which we've thrown ourselves into it. Because what's fulfilling is being fully in. What's fulfilling is playing the game. You could even say that what fulfillment is a description of the feeling that we have when we're not thinking about how it would be better if it was different. But there is a satisfaction that comes from being all in. There's a feeling to that. And you can be all in a sporting event. You can be all in your job. You can be all in on an assembly line. I was all in driving a forklift for a while. I was all in being I was what we called a ballet parker. So I used to work in summer stock. And those of you who don't know summer stock, this is politically incorrect. But when I started summer stock, I was a 15-year-old, I think, wannabe actor. And there was an older gentleman who was playing the lead in one of the plays who came in and said, "Ah, summer stock, $200 a week and all the apprentices you can eat." And essentially what summer stock is it's a chance for actors, often film and television actors, to come in and do a show with like two to four weeks rehearsal, and it runs for no more than a month. And then the next show comes in, and then the next show comes in. So they're usually anywhere from 3 to 6 shows over the summer. They usually have very good actors, and it's a fun thing for the actors, and it's a great thing for the audience. But a part of how they manage to do so many shows in such a short space of time is they bring in a lot of interns and apprentices who help make the sets, help do the costumes, help out backstage, help out front of house. And I was one of those apprentices, and one of the job that everybody liked least was the parking job, because it wasn't valet parking. It wasn't like you got to drive anyone's cars. Basically, you got a bunch of frustrated people, usually who were late for the theater, trying to park them in basically where we were in the Berkshire Theater Festival in Stockbridge, Massachusetts, was a pebble lot. So it wasn't even a proper parking lot. So you were always stacking cars, and it was just considered like scut work, you know, the job that you get until you've earned your way to a better job. Well, I, for whatever reason, just decided not to find it a terrible job. And I started doing what a friend of mine named ballet parking. So I would sort of dance people to their car spots, and I started getting tips. And in fact, I started getting so many tips that people started complaining that I had that job, even though initially it had been a punishment that I had that job. And what made that fun was not inherent in the job. It wasn't even the tips. What made that job rewarding, what made that job fulfilling, was that I threw myself into it. Now, that is something that you can do anywhere with anything. You can throw yourself into lunch, and you'll have a much, much more fulfilling lunch than you would otherwise have. I would go as far as to say, if you throw yourself into lunch at McDonald's, you will have a better time than being dispassionately disinterested at the Ritz. Well, okay, so if throwing myself in is the secret to fulfillment, is that why that's the advice? Well, no, that's only part of it. That's only a small part of why throwing yourself in is such a difference maker. Because yes, it makes the experience more fulfilling and richer, but it's only when you're in the game that you get to have ideas occur to you about how to play it. It's only when you're in the game that you get insights into the nature of the game. It's only when you're in the game. So I do a lot of, I train coaches. So one of our signature programs is Super Coach Academy. And for those of you who are interested, go to academy.com. We have, I think, 4 places left for next year's academy. Well, part of what I do in those trainings is I do demonstrations. So I get clients in from outside and work with them in front of the room. And very often people say, "Boy, I don't think I could ever come up with what you came up with." Or people will listen to this radio show who do some coaching on their own, and they'll go, "Boy, I just don't think, you know, I would never have known what to have said to that person who called in." But see, that's not actually true. Because what occurs to you on the sidelines as an observer is completely different to what occurs to you when you're in the game. And so throwing yourself in not only makes what you do more fulfilling, it makes you better at it, because it literally puts you in touch with our, you know, what I often talk about on this show is our innate intelligence, our deeper wisdom, our creative mind. Mind, wisdom, intelligence, they're in the moment responsive qualities. You can't plan in the moment wisdom. You can't plan in the moment intelligence. You have to be in the moment. You have to be in the game. And the way you get in the game is you throw yourself in. like throwing yourself in a swimming pool to get wet and then finding out that you can float and swim and play. When you throw yourself into whatever it is that is in front of you, you'll find that not only will it be more fulfilling, but you'll just be better at it. So, numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada, outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. Yes, I'm aware Canada's outside the U.S. Sorry, Canadians. Just came out that way. Let's begin here in Los Angeles with Katya. Katya, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello, Michael. Thank you so much. It came very, very, it's like, I asked, my husband died yesterday, 6 years ago. And I feel like, I've been stuck and I've been grieving and nothing is moving. Like I'm raising my son and seems everything is okay. I like to write. And yesterday my teacher, during writing course was like yelling at me. And then the day was difficult. And I thought I just can't seem to, find myself to get out and do something. Don't want to stay stuck, but mm-hmm. I can't find passion. I can't find another happiness, without Michael. So it's just strange.
So Katya, first off, I'm sorry for your loss, and I'm going to assume you know me well enough that if I say anything that sounds insensitive or disrespectful, you'll ignore it.
Oh, no.
Okay?
No,
I always kind of feel the need to say that, because sometimes people go, oh, my God, he's saying that to her husband died.
Right. No. It's okay. Because yesterday you should see, don't think that.
Okay. Good. Then. Here's a few things that just to kind of conversation starters almost. So the first one is it true that you can't get yourself out of the house and motivated, or is it true today? In other words, have you really not left home for 6 years?
Oh, no, I'm very active. I'm
okay.
Talking about job. Oh, yeah, I'm very active, and I invite people, and I cook, and I have a good time with my girlfriends, and, I take care of my son. It's just like job-wise. I'm talking
okay,
about...
Okay, it's okay if we poke around a little.
Oh, please.
Yeah, okay, so here's my... Because here's what doesn't quite make sense to me. What does your husband dying have to do with whether or not you take a job?
Oh, just the general mood. Like I'm kind of, sad and not miss him a lot and think, yeah, you're right. There's not much. It shouldn't.
And I'm not saying that to invoke guilt, right? I'm just saying if you can be sad and in a low mood, but go out and do other things, you can be sad in a low mood and entertain friends. You can be sad in a low mood and look after your kid.
Mm-hmm. And I do.
Why can't you be sad in a low mood and work?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't have an answer to that, by the way, but I mm-hmm. think there's a false connection going on somewhere.
Yeah, probably. Another problem, I'm 55 and I came to this country, I was 40 years old. It is hard for me to find something, I'm overqualified or I'm underqualified, but there is something always. I like to write, and writing, of course, doesn't bring immediate satisfaction.
Sure. Sure. So but again, let me, and tell me if I start getting ahead of you, but... Mm-hmm. The fact that if the question you'd asked was, hey, I'm struggling to get a good job, that would be one question. But what you said is, hey, my husband died 6 years ago. I'm really sad and it's difficult to get myself motivated.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand. Sometimes getting a job takes longer than other times. And, so, you know, I get all that. I'm not suggesting, oh, come on, get off your butt, just go do it. But there's no direct cause effect between how we feel and what we do. Right? My guess is what's your child's name?
Mark.
Mark. Okay. So my guess is that if Mark needs lunch, how old is he?
He's 17.
17. Okay, so maybe not lunch. But if
oh no, he does. I make lunch.
Okay, so if Mark needs lunch, you don't go, honey, your father died 6 years ago. I can't make you lunch.
Oh no, I never been like that. No,
right. So can we separate those two things out and talk about them as two separate things?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So one thing we'll talk about is your husband dying and sort of what the feelings that you've got around that. Okay. And then the other is what you might want to do for work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So which one do you want to take on first?
Oh, let's not go into my being sad. We'll
okay.
just jump into finding solution.
Great. So now, why do you want a job? Do you need the money? Do you just feel like it would be good to have something to do?
Everything. Yeah. It's not like I'm hungry. It's just I'd like to be, just some fulfillment and some meeting people, dressing up, and if I would write, it would just be like something complimenting, not because my main job now is, you know, cleaning house, cooking, and writing. I want something else to get more satisfaction from, you know, just my goal in life, something to find, you know. And I volunteer at church, and I do all the projects. Not enough. Seems like I need to earn money in order to prove myself that I can.
So all I can give you, Katya, is the world according to Michael Neal here. Okay, so in the world according to Michael Neal, which may not be the real world, understand that, but in the world according to Michael Neal, our fulfillment doesn't come from being gainfully employed. It doesn't come from proving to ourselves that we can do it. It comes from being fully engaged with whatever it is that we're doing.
From I heard that this morning, and I think it's, I can see that. Yeah.
Now here's, I want you to hear two different problems and think about which one would be easier to solve. So problem one is, I want to find, I want to find a way of being more fully engaged with the world and with others. Okay, that's challenge one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Challenge two is, I want to find a job that will fulfill me and distract me and make me money and be good.
Yes.
Okay. Do you hear how one of those is a much harder challenge than the other?
You mean the first one?
Oh, interesting. So you think it would be harder to find a way to just engage with people than it would be to find
a
job that will fulfill you, that will meet this criteria, that will meet that criteria?
You're right. The second one.
Yeah. And so here's the funny thing. The first one, I promise you, you could be doing within a week. Because that really is just about, if you can see, you know what I really want right now is just to be more engaged with other people, be a little bit more engaged with life. You if that was your goal, you genuinely could be doing that within the week.
Oh, I'm doing that, and it's easy. You're right. I'm very communicative. Like, I'm very open, and I have many friends. But it doesn't still bring me that... like maybe I want to do something with friends, you know, not just have tea.
Okay.
Like I would.
So here's going to be your homework, Katya. Would you be able to phone in another week?
Sure.
Okay, so here's your homework, and then I'd love for you to phone back and let us know how it goes, and we'll take it on from here. Okay?
Okay.
So this week, I want you to take all that other stuff off your plate. Let this week be as difficult or easy as it is, given the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
But make your only goal this week to throw yourself in even more to the activities that you engage with other people.
Okay.
And report back on what comes of that experiment, and we'll talk more next time.
Okay.
All right, Katya. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael, very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
You know, we are great conflators. If you don't know the word conflate, it's where you take two things that are separate, and in your mind, you talk about them as if they're one thing. And the reason a lot of our problems look so difficult and intractable is because we've conflated multiple things as if the one is dependent on the other. And the most common way that human beings do that, and it's completely innocent, it comes from an innocent misunderstanding of where experience comes from, is that they conflate the way they feel with a circumstance. So they go, they don't say, I want to feel fulfilled and I want a job. They say, I want a fulfilling job. They don't say, I want to be in love and I want a long-term sexual relationship. They say, I want a relationship that brings me love. They don't say, I want to... I want to change the world and I want to enjoy my life. They say, I want to find the right way to change the world that fits perfectly for. That was a terrible example, but hopefully the main idea is coming across that when you try and combine a feeling with a circumstance, it makes it infinitely harder because feelings don't come from circumstances. Feelings are an independent variable. We feel what we think. That's it. Whatever you're thinking right now is what you're feeling. That's how it works for all of us. And then there's life, right? There's circumstance. There's things going on. Now, it's like having two parallel tracks. Like in a movie, there's the movie and there's the soundtrack. And in the old movies, the silent movies, the soundtrack was literally provided in real time by a piano player. Well, we're more like that. We're more like one of those Charlie Chaplin movies that when it originally played, there was just the silent movie and there was the guy on the piano or the organ playing along with it. Except that the piano player is our own head, right? The piano player is our own thought stream. And it makes the movie look different. So if scary movie is being played, scary music's being played, it seems like a more ominous movie. So you just have a person walking down the street, and if ominous music is playing in the background, it's like, ooh, it's ominous them walking down the street. The street is deserted. Where is everybody? Whereas if it's dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee as the person's walking down the street, then it's like, oh, something fun's going to happen. Well, that's us. We've got this inner soundtrack going on all the time, and it makes us interpret what's going on outside of us differently. But when you can see that it's two independent variables, then you stop looking to the world to make you feel better. And then navigating the world's not so hard because you're not looking at it in terms of what it can give you. You're just looking at the world in terms of what needs to happen next. And you can throw yourself into that game and you can do really well in the world. Let's stay in LA. And let's go to Los Angeles and speak with Sarah. Sarah, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today? Sarah going once. Sarah in Los Angeles going twice. All right, Sarah, I'm going to keep you on hold. I'll try and come back to you. Let's go to Jacksonville and speak with Sandra. Sandra, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about?
Hey, Michael. I'm so excited to be talking to you. I've been listening to you for so long. So thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yay, okay. Big Hay House fan. So I have anxiety issues, very much so. I've been dealing with them. I've been going to support groups, codependent things, all kind of things. But my issues all stem from, I think, relationships. And I've been married twice. I'm in a 3-year relationship now with, and I feel like I'm in the same boat. I keep attracting the same person over and over, you know, people that are not emotionally available. So I know this in my mind. I'm logically, I get it. I understand it. I read the books. I do all of it. But today something happened and it triggered one of those anxiety responses. I didn't get an answer back to one of my texts for like an hour. And so I went into anxiety. I felt it all through my body. I couldn't think. I was at work. I was walking around in circles. I felt knotted. And then thinking, my gosh, this, I can't live like this. I cannot live like this because one text. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, first,
stop that. Yeah,
look, yeah, I'll give you the Bob Newhart answer. Stop it.
Okay.
There's a couple things. So okay. One thing is, how cool is it that you are clear enough, even with all that, to know that, hell, if I'm reacting like this to a mixed text, that's me. Like, to me, that is super cool. You're not looking for the guy to be different. You recognize.
Right.
You recognize, hey, yes. you know what? If that's enough for me to go, that can't be them.
Right.
Now, whatever else it might be wrong with them, I'm not saying they're great. I don't know. But that's not on them.
Right.
Now, what's cool about that is that the nature of the mind is that when we see that it's a thought problem, and not a world problem or a them problem, mm-hmm. it starts to change all by itself. Because thought is so fluid, thought is so transient when we see that it's thought, and we don't think it's not thought, it's them, that our own intelligence just kind of takes care of it behind the scenes. And before we know it, the world just looks different to us. So it's almost like the moment that we see it for what it is, it begins to change. It's like we caught Waldo. You know those Where's Waldo things?
Yeah.
Like we found Waldo, so Waldo moves somewhere else now.
I listened to a show that you had one time, and you said something about it's like somebody coming into your hotel lobby and sitting in your hotel lobby. You don't have to give them a room.
Mm-hmm.
You just kick them out of your lobby. Do you remember that show?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember that show, but that sounds like me. I mean, the other way I sometimes say it is it's not that you're attracting the wrong guys, it's that you're dating them. Right? I mean,
that's
like,
exactly
you can attract anyone you want, but it's you know, I think you still get the choice about who you go on a second date with.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and you know, and Michael, that's just it. I get it. I bring a notebook with me, so when I do have my anxiety moment, I know it's me. I know it's all me. And I've been thinking, you know, this is his role in your life is to come, and he's not probably the love of your life. He's here to serve a role in your life, and that's to go have fun and hang out with this person. But then that anxiety creeps in, and it just throws a blanket over my head.
Do you know what anxiety attacks are?
I can tell you what mine feel like. I'm not sure what others.
Well, okay. No. Not what they feel like, because they feel bloody awful is what they feel like. But what they are is they're the feeling of us. Now, check this out, right? Okay. So I was about to say it as truth. That used to be my specialty way back when. I used to work primarily with clients who had anxiety attacks. And one of the things that I noticed is that almost invariably, if I asked somebody about the first time they'd had an anxiety attack, mm-hmm. There was some significant traumatic experience that they'd had. And the panic attacks are whenever they think they're going to go back to that kind of trauma, they try to prevent it. And the panic attack is actually the system trying to shut down the other feeling.
Oh. That's interesting.
Yeah, no, it's just, again, I throw it out there because I worked with it enough times. It's not something anyone ever taught me, but I just worked with a few hundred people who had panic attacks, and I just noticed that pattern quite consistently. Now, what's interesting, and I'll give you the most extreme example that I ever came across. So I had a woman who came to me, and she her panic attacks had gotten to the point where she was agoraphobic. She couldn't go out mm-hmm. in public. And her boyfriend actually brought her to my office on the back of his car under a pile of coats. That's how bad it was for her.
Wow.
And she came to me, and this was back when I was doing NLP stuff. So I did more stuff that sounds clever than I do now. Now I just talk to people, but so I said to her, before we said anything, once she'd kind of settled in, I said, tell me what, for you, what are the two stupidest words in the English language? And she looked at me like I was crazy, which I might've been. And she said, okay, I'll play, French fry and parka. I was like, okay, fair enough. So I said, I always have found the word panic attack sounds really scary, right?
Yeah.
So instead of panic attack, I said, so we're going to just talk about panic attacks as French fries. Okay. And then I explained to her about how I'd had this experience where for most people, there was some traumatic feeling that they were scared of, that they would do anything to not feel again. And when they thought they were starting to feel it, they would try and shut it down. And that was the actual panic attack. And I said, call that original thing a parka. Okay. I had her tell me about her French fries. I had her tell me about how often she had French fries, how long they lasted, when her first French fry that she could remember was. And we talked to her, and she was funny. So we had fun with that. And then I asked her to tell me about her parka. And she immediately knew. Now, not everyone does, but she immediately knew. She said, I forget what age she was, but she was rather young, and she was on a bus in South London. And she said, and I looked at the person next to me on the bus, and I felt the boundaries between us dissolving as if we were one energy, one being. And I looked at the man in front of me, and the same thing happened. It was like there wasn't a me and a him. It was like our bodies dissolved and we were of this one energy. And then I looked out the window, and every person on the street, there was that same sense that we weren't separate. We were all of this one energy. And I'm listening to this, and I'm thinking, oh my God, she had like a mini enlightenment experience.
Yeah.
And she said, and that was the moment that I knew Satan was taking over my body.
Oh dear. Okay.
And I was like, oh, yeah, if I thought that was Satan taking over my body, I wouldn't like that either.
Exactly.
Right. So here was Michael, the brilliant coach, right? This was the sum total of my intervention with her, really, is I gave her a copy of a book called What is Enlightenment by John White, or edited by John White, which I don't know if it's still in print even, but it was essentially a collection of people sharing their enlightenment experiences. And I said, read that and call me. Well, she not only never had panic attacks again after that, but she actually got so, her transformation was so dramatic. She wound up going to college in another city, and commuting on the train, getting a degree in psychology. And the reason I even know the story is because she came back to interview me for her thesis, her psychology thesis.
God, that's awesome.
Now that's the thing, is if what that feeling really meant was that Satan was taking over her body, I'm on her side. Like, let's do anything we can to not go there. Right. But when she saw that all it was enlightenment, like all it was actually a momentary glitch in the matrix that allowed her to experience the oneness of life more purely than most of us ever get the chance to. Well, then there was nothing to shut down anymore. There was nothing to protect herself from. So
yeah.
I'm just sort of offering you that. And I'm not even saying go on a deep search to find the original traumatic. I'm just saying sit with that.
Okay.
And see what it does.
Okay.
See what comes and phone us back.
Yeah. Do you have a book for me to read? I've read the Inside Out Revolution. I read that one.
All right. Well, why don't we just give you the space within then?
So
if you stay on the line, we'll get you a copy of The Space Within.
Oh, thank you.
It'd be a pleasure, Sandra.
Thank you, Michael, so much.
All right, take care. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, I feel like, oh, I'd better do my, I am not a qualified licensed therapist in the state of California. It was never about that for me. I'm in that sense, really interested in how things work. So I'm just looking for how does it work? And when you understand how something works, you do better with it. Right? If I understand how a refrigerator works, then I'm going to know it needs to be plugged in to keep food cold. So I'm going to remember to plug it in. Right? If I know how a car works, I won't try and my youngest daughter has just started driving lessons. And, you know, I'd forgotten. She didn't know which pedal made the car go and which one made it stop. Like, she was going to struggle driving. But as soon as she knew a little bit more about how it worked, this pedal makes it go, this pedal makes it stop. Well, she was doing some driving straight away. And that's the nature of it, right? That's the nature of life, is that the clearer understanding we have of how it works, the better we're going to do. And it works one way only, from inside to out. Thought creates feeling. Thought creates perception. Thought creates experience. And underneath all that thinking is a guiding intelligence that I talk about, again, as an innate intelligence, or as a universal mind, or even a divine mind. That if we let it, we'll get more and more of a pure flow from that mind, and get less and less caught up in sort of all the insecure, neurotic thoughts that arise from our life experience to this point in time. Let's go back and have another go with Sarah. Sarah, welcome back. Are you with us?
Hi. Yes,
yay.
I'm here. How
what
are
we going to talk about today, Sarah? I am well.
I am calling to ask for some insight about my current situation. I manage a store, and the company owns over 10 in the U.S., and mm-hmm. the one that I'm at is the only one that's not in a major mall, and it's like a little boutique on a busy street, and there's so many things that I could look at that I do look at to try to shift my focus to think thoughts that are good about where I'm at. But there is a lot of construction. It's a lot of changes. So business has completely been affected, everyone's business in the area. And I am just really unhappy where I'm at. And I feel like I guess I just feel stuck, because I don't want to leave. I want to stay.
Okay, so can I let me jump in, and then you can guide
please.
Me.
Please.
Okay. So okay. I'm going to go far left to begin, right? Have you ever read Man's Search for Meaning?
No.
By Viktor Frankl?
It's the
story of a psychiatrist who was interned in Auschwitz during World War II. And he talks about how people had such a variety of experiences being in a concentration camp, including the experience of peace and joy. And he said when he saw that there were men and women who were able to go to their death knowingly, with a smile on their face and genuine peace in their hearts, he realized that the last of the human freedoms that no one can take away is the freedom to choose, is the way he puts it. Now, I don't see it necessarily as a choice, like, I'm going to choose to be happy. But my guess is, if people could find peace and freedom in Auschwitz, you can find some in a mall with construction. Now, I'm not trying to pick on you, because, you know, I have gotten, upset with the service in first class on an airplane, and it took me a little while to wake up to the fact that I had to be in first class on an airplane to have that problem. So I'm not putting myself out there as like, you know, I've got it all together. But
not
at
anything.
Least I know that it's me. Right? I don't think it's an airplane.
Right.
And it's sort of like I was saying to our last caller, it's the good news is, when you see that you're suffering from thought, not from your circumstances, it does two things for you. One, your experience will begin to change simply for seeing it for what it is. Oh yeah, I'm caught up in some unfulfilled thinking, And when that changes, my feeling will change. So that's one thing it does for you. The other
I
thing
think
it,
for
yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go
ahead. I think for me it's more like human interaction. So people can't park, they can't come in, they don't feel safe on the sidewalk next to all the cars with their kids. And
So then this is the second part of what I was going to say. Now, when we're not caught up in making it about us and trying to make ourselves feel better, there are logistics in the world that can work better, right? There are circumstances in the world that if we work with them, we can make the best of them or make the most of them or even change them. Mm-hmm. And what makes it seem really hard is that we're not just throwing ourselves into the circumstance clean and trying to sort it out. We're trying to sort ourselves out by sorting the circumstances out.
Mm.
And whenever it becomes about us at that level and our feelings, it just gets messy.
Yeah.
So again, if we separate the two things out and go, hey, to the extent that you can see that your feelings have nothing to do with them all and everything to do with thought in the moment will change. So that's one piece. On the other hand, if you throw yourself into creating the best customer experience you can have in a place where there is construction and difficulty accessing and all of that, I guarantee you, you'll come up with some creative solutions you haven't even thought of yet. But they're two completely separate things. And it's only when we conflate them and think the circumstance, I've got to fix the circumstance to fix the feeling, that makes it hard. Because we're terrible at fixing our own psychology.
So let me understand better. You're saying that I don't like the circumstances in my environment. So instead of trying to focus on the circumstances of what is and trying to change that, to focus on my feelings so that the circumstances aren't detrimental to how I feel.
No. Thank you for clarifying. Because what I'm saying is actually slightly different. What I'm saying is there are two things going on that you have been thinking of as one thing going on. So one thing that's going on is you've got some habituated thinking that creates feelings in you of discontent, of frustration, of maybe a bit of hopelessness, maybe a bit of, gets your mind running down tracks of, oh, am I in the wrong place? Should I find a different job? Right. You've got that going on inside you. Now, there's also, you manage a store in a place where right now the circumstances are making it difficult for the store to do as well as you'd like it to do.
Right.
Now, both of those are solvable problems. But they have very different solutions. The solution to the frustrated, stuck feeling is actually just seeing it for what it is, because there's a self-correcting mechanism in human beings. And when we see that it's just our own thinking, that thinking begins to change all by itself.
Mm.
And when the thinking changes, the feelings will change with it. So that's one thing. There's nothing to do with that one. There's just something to see. Now, the other one is a logistical, a practical thing. Well, that one, if you throw yourself into that one and go, okay, let me roll up my sleeves and see what I can do to create better customer experience given the situation that I'm in. Well, again, once you're in that game, ideas will come to you in the moment that just aren't available to you sitting on the sidelines thinking about it or thinking that in some way it's connected to your feeling. It's literally two entirely different things. One is a mining operation. One is going inside and seeing what's already going on in there. The other is a manufacturing operation. It's going out into the world and making something different than what's going on right now. Does that make sense? I've either stunned her into silence or she's having a bad phone connection here. Sarah going once. Sarah going twice. Oh, I'm sorry we lost you, Sarah. Hopefully that makes sense. You can certainly listen back on the recording. And hopefully other people listening are kind of hearing that as well. Because really, that sort of seems to be our theme. I'm going to get in one or two more callers. So if you're on hold, please hang on. I'll get to you in just a minute. But that seems to be sort of a universal theme. That what makes it seem difficult to get things done in the world is that we think that's going to change the way we feel. Right? Oh, well, when I'm rich, I'll feel secure. When I'm rich, I won't feel scared. Oh, when I've got a partner that, when I'm in the right relationship, then I won't feel lonely. When I'm in the right relationship, then I won't feel scared. When I'm, you can fill in the blanks. It doesn't work that way. It only works one way. I feel thought, and I live in the world. Sid Banks, the sort of enlightened Scottish welder that I talk about a lot on the show and in my books, he said something to the effect, and this isn't an exact quote, but that if you can live in the world without projecting your feelings onto the objects of the world, you're mentally healthy even when you feel miserable. And if you project your feelings onto objects in the world and think the feelings are coming from or connected to the objects, you're mentally ill even if you're feeling good. And we societally, culturally, live in an innocent mental illness where we think our feelings are coming at us from life, from objects. And there's something amazing that happens in human beings when they see things as they are and they see, oh, I think, feel, and then there's my life. And in fact, the feeling of life underneath all the thoughts and feelings that we have all day long is the feeling that we describe as love, of peace, of well-being. And all the other thoughts and feelings just come and go inside that space. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Vancouver and speak with Angela. Angela, welcome to the show. Thank you for holding. What are we going to talk about today?
Hello.
Hello.
I am so nervous. But first I want to say I got what you wanted to give to Sarah.
Nice.
Yeah, that makes sense. And now I have so many thoughts. But I guess the original thought that I was going to actually question, I was going to ask, that came from a thought that was triggered by the first call, and you've partially answered it already, but is, you know, throwing myself in. I love throwing myself into life and living life. I feel very blessed. But it's when those around you that you love so much, you know, just don't want to. They don't want to partake, or they're just not into it.
And, right.
Like even, let's say, you know, going to the park, and I think, I'll be at the park having a great time, and I think, wow, they could be here sharing it with me, and instead they're not.
So let me ask you a question that's going to sound insensitive, because I don't think I've sounded insensitive enough to people yet on the call today. Yeah. what's it to you?
I know.
I'm not saying I don't know what you're talking about. Of course I know what you're talking about. But you're living your life the best you know how.
Yeah.
And they're living their lives the best they know how. Now, I'm not saying don't want more for them.
Yeah.
But I'm not quite sure how you diminishing your experience and pulling yourself out of your experience is going to help them.
Yeah. So can you talk to me a bit about, I guess, when you do have, I guess, some people that are just on different wavelengths, I guess?
Let me try. So I've got a couple of thoughts. The first one is, there's got to be a way to love people without needing them to behave the way you want them to behave.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Right? So,
yes.
So, because otherwise that's not love.
Yeah, no, definitely. Get that.
Right?
Yes.
So I'm not saying cut them out of your life, don't care about them anymore, or anything like that. I'm just saying that your love for them is an independent variable.
Correct.
Okay. Then there's a second piece, which is, well, okay, if I wanted to encourage people to engage more, how might I do that? And that's just an interesting challenge, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's the challenge every teacher has with every student in their class. That's the challenge that, you know, every radio show host has in getting people to call into their show. That's the challenge that every company has in getting people to engage with their product. Right? That's just a challenge. That's just mm-hmm. Something that we can be up to in life.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is seeing that my ever-changing thoughts and feelings about it are, again, completely independent of all of that.
Wow. Yep, I'm taking notes.
Yeah.
But it's so true, and I guess I have to come to that point, too. I mean, I can appreciate, because I'm in a very different place right now than I was a few years ago, and years back, but that we are in ever-changing places in our life. That's ongoing.
Well, and in our minds, right? I mean, look, imagine being invited to two different parties.
Yes.
Okay? And one person who just clearly is high on life is saying, hey, I got a bunch of people coming over. It's going to be awesome. There's a clown. Right. And the other one is, oh, my God, I don't think anyone's going to come to my party. Angela, you've got to come to my party. If you don't come to my party, we're not friends anymore.
Yeah.
Right. That's essentially, like, I'm not saying you might not get sucked into the guilt and go to the second party.
Yeah.
But I am saying you're not going to have as great a time.
OK, gotcha.
And basically, which Angela is inviting them to come out to play?
Now, can I ask you, though, on that same note, like even your intuition, and let's even throw a third party in there or something, your intuition, does it ever get confused sometimes? Does it ever have a hard time reading or gauging?
Reading or gauging what? I mean, the answer is going to be yes. Okay. So like, it doesn't actually almost matter what the question is. Of course it does. But what specifically do you mean?
Well, like even, I think, cause that's, I was listening also to your answer about anxiety and things, but I used to be able to, let's just say I hit, 50 and things just started going out of whack. And I honestly have started having some issues with anxiety, self-doubt, and just, whereas before I really trusted my intuition. I could just get that feeling and go with it. I knew it was, and I think it was a thought then a feeling that, like you said, that would, sort of direct me, guide me. Whereas now I just find that intuition gets really muddled sometimes, and so it's like, oops, do I go left? Do I go right? Do I go straight?
So the only way that I know to hear the GPS in my car more clearly is to turn down the radio.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can't turn up the GPS beyond a certain point, but yeah. I can turn down the radio.
That's what I'm in the middle of doing, yes.
Very cool. Thank you, Angela.
Oh, thank you so much. Pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice to meet you. Thank you for calling in. Well, thank you, guys. We are coming to the end of another. I thought it was a lovely show. I hope you did, too. We're going to be back live again next week. As always, if you're interested in the kind of stuff I talk about on the show, check out michaelneal.org. There's the free Caffeine for the Soul blog. There's the podcast over on iTunes. Also, programs coming up. We got a bunch of stuff coming up in London. So if you're going to be in the UK, if you are in the UK, please do check out the events page. We've got some very low-priced evening events. We've got one space left in a small group intensive with me, and we're also going to do a whole thing on working with groups over the last weekend in October. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.